suggested she had a short list of possible victims, and none of the options were good.
Who?
Was all she said, her voice steady. Wisps of smoke from the conical diffuser beside the computer drifted past her, carrying the bright, clean scent of peppermint. Of course she was one of those aromatherapy zealots, conned into handing over her marks for the promise of feeling happier, or being better in bed, or growing another half a brain to match the half she already had.
Maximus Tertian, Isaiah told her. We have reports that you had a meeting with him in the VIP mezzanine of the White Raven 2 hours before his death.
Hunt could have sworn Bryce's shoulders sagged slightly. She said,
Maximus Tertian is dead.
They nodded. She angled her head.
Who did it?
That's what we're trying to figure out, Isaiah said neutrally. Hunt had heard of Tertian, a creep of a vamp who couldn't take no for an answer, and whose rich, sadistic father had taught him well, and shielded him from any fallout from his hideous behavior. If Hunt was being honest, Midgard was better off without him. Except for the headache they'd now have to endure when Tertian's father got word that his favored son had been killed. Today's meeting would be just the start. Isaiah went on.
You might have been one of the last people to see him alive. Can you walk us through your encounter with him?
No detail is too small. Bryce glanced between them.
Is this your way of feeling out whether I killed him?
Hunt smiled slightly. You don't seem too cut up that Tertian's dead. Those amber eyes slid to him, annoyance lighting them. He'd admit it. Males would do a lot of fucked up things for someone who looked like that. He'd done precisely those sorts of things for Shahar once. Now he bore the halo tattooed across his brow, and the slave tattoo on his wrist because of it. His chest tightened. Bryce said,
I'm sure someone's already said that Maximus and I parted on unfriendly terms. We met to finish up a deal for the gallery, and when it was done, he thought he was entitled to some personal time with me.
Hunt understood her perfectly. It lined up with everything he'd heard regarding Tertian and his father. It also offered a good amount of motive. Bryce went on.
I don't know where he went after the Raven. If he was killed on the outskirts of the meat market, I'd assume he was heading there to purchase what he wanted to take from me.
Cold, sharp words. Isaiah's expression grew stony. Was his behavior last night different from how he acted during previous meetings?
We only interacted over emails and the phone, but I'd say no. Last night was our first face-to-face, and he acted exactly as his past behavior would indicate.
Hunt asked, why not meet here? Why the Raven?
He got off on the thrill of acting like our deal was secretive. He claimed he didn't trust that my boss wasn't recording the meeting. But he really just wanted people to notice him, to see him doing deals. I had to slide him the paperwork in a bill folio, and he swapped it with one of his own, that sort of thing.
She met Hunt's stare.
How did he die?
The question was blunt, and she didn't smile or blink. A girl used to being answered, obeyed, heeded. Her parents weren't wealthy, or so her file said, yet her apartment 15 blocks away suggested outrageous wealth, either from this job or some shady shit that had escaped even the Legion's watchful eyes. Isaiah sighed.
Those details are classified.
She shook her head.
I can't help you. Tertian and I did the deal, he got handsy, and he left.
Every bit of the camera footage and eyewitness reports from the Raven confirmed that. But that wasn't why they were here. What they'd been sent over to do. Isaiah said,
and when did Prince Rune Danon show up? If you know everything, why bother asking me?
She didn't wait for them to answer before she said,
you know, you two never told me your names.
Hunt couldn't read her expression, her relaxed body language. They hadn't initiated contact since that night in the Legion's holding center, and neither of them had introduced themselves then. Had she even registered their faces in that drug-induced haze? Isaiah adjusted his pristine white wings. I'm Isaiah Tiberian, commander of the 33rd Imperial Legion. This is Hunt Athalar, my... Isaiah tripped up, as if realizing that it had been a damn long time since they'd had to introduce themselves with any sort of rank attached. So Hunt did Isaiah a favor and finished with his second. If Isaiah was surprised to hear it, that calm, pretty boy face didn't let on. Isaiah was technically his superior in the Triari and in the 33rd as a whole, even if the shit Hunt did for Micah made him directly answerable to the governor. Isaiah had never pulled rank, though, as if he remembered those days before the fall, and who'd been in charge then. As if it fucking mattered now. No, all that mattered about that shit was that Isaiah had killed at least 36 Imperial legionaries that day on Mount Hermon, and Hunt now bore the burden of paying back each one of those lives to the Republic, to fulfill Micah's bargain. Bryce's eyes flicked to their brows, the tattoos there. Hunt braced for the sneering remark, for any of the bullshit comments people still liked to make about the Fallen Legion and their failed rebellion. But she only said, "So, what? You two investigate crimes on the side? I thought that was auxiliary territory. Don't you have better things to do in the 33rd than play buddy cop?" Isaiah, apparently not amused that there was one person in this city who didn't fall at his feet, said a tad stiffy, "Do you have people who can verify your whereabouts after you left the White Raven?" Bryce held Isaiah's gaze, then flicked her eyes to Hunt. And he still couldn't read her mask of boredom as she pushed off the desk and took a few deliberate steps toward them before crossing her arms. "Just my doorman. And Rune Dannon, but you already knew that." How anyone could walk in heels that high was beyond him. How anyone could breathe in a dress that tight was also a mystery. It was long enough that it covered the area on her thigh where the scar from that night 2 years ago would be. That is, if she hadn't paid some medwitch to erase it. For someone who clearly took pains to dress nicely, he had little doubt she'd gotten it removed immediately. Party girls didn't like scars messing with how they looked in a swimsuit. Isaiah's white wings shifted. "Would you call Rune Dannon a friend?" Bryce shrugged. "He's a distant cousin." But apparently invested enough to have charged into the interrogation room 2 years ago, and shown up at the VIP bar last night. If he was that protective of Quinlan, that might be one hell of a motive too, even if Rune and his father would make the interrogation a nightmare. Bryce smiled sharply, as if she remembered that fact too. "Have fun talking to him." Hunt clenched his jaw, but she strode for the front door, hips swishing like she knew precisely how spectacular her ass was. "Just a moment, Miss Quinlan," Isaiah said. The commander's voice was calm, but take no shit. Hunt hid his smile. Seeing Isaiah angry was always a good show, so long as you weren't on the receiving end. Quinlan hadn't realized that yet, as she glanced over his shoulder. "Yes." Hunt eyed her as Isaiah at last voiced their true reason for this little visit. "We weren't just sent here to ask you about your whereabouts." She gestured to the gallery. "You want to buy something pretty for the governor?" Hunt's mouth twitched upward. "Funny you should mention him. He's on his way here right now." A slow blink. Again, no sign or scent of fear.
"Why?"
"Micah just told us to get information from you about last night, and then make sure you were available and have you get your boss on the line." Given how infrequently Hunt was asked to help out on investigations, he'd been shocked as hell to get the order. But considering that he and Isaiah had been there that night in the alley, he supposed that made them the top choices to head this sort of thing up.
"Micah is coming here."
Her throat bobbed once.
"He'll be here in 10 minutes, Isaiah said. He nodded toward her phone. "I suggest you call your boss, Miss Quinlan."
Her breathing turned slightly shallow.
"Why?"
Hunt dropped the bomb at last.
"Because Maximus Tertian's injuries were identical to the ones inflicted upon Danica Fendir and the Pack of Devils. Pulped and dismembered. Her eyes shuddered.
But Philip Briggs killed them. He summoned that demon to kill them, and he's in prison.
Her voice sharpened. He's been in prison for 2 years. In a place worse than prison, but that was beside the point.
We know, Hunt said, keeping his face devoid of any reaction.
He can't have killed Tertian. How could he possibly summon the demon from jail? Bryce said.
She swallowed, catching herself, realizing perhaps why Micah was coming. Several people she'd known had been killed, all within hours of interacting with her.
You think Briggs didn't do it? Didn't kill Danica and her pack?
We don't know that for sure, Isaiah cut in, but the specific details of how they all died never leaked, so we have good reason to believe this wasn't a copycat murder. Bryce asked flatly,
Have you met with Sabine?
Hunt said, Have you?
We do our best to stay out of each other's way.
It was perhaps the only smart thing Bryce Quinlan had ever decided to do. Hunt remembered Sabine's venom as she'd glared through the window at Bryce in the observation room 2 years ago, and he had no doubt Sabine was just waiting for enough time to pass for Quinlan's unfortunate and untimely death to be considered nothing more than a fluke. Bryce walked back to her desk, giving them a wide berth. To her credit, her gait remained unhurried and solid. She picked up the phone without so much as looking at them.
We'll wait outside, Isaiah offered.
Hunt opened his mouth to object, but Isaiah shot him a warning look. Fine. He and Quinlan could spar later. Phone held in a white-knuckled grip, Bryce listened to the other end ring. Twice. Then,
Morning, Bryce.
Bryce's heartbeat pounded in her arms, her legs, her stomach.
Two legionaries are here?
She swallowed.
The commander of the 33rd and,
she blew out a breath,
the Umbra Mortis.
She'd recognized Isaiah Tiberian. He graced the nightly news and gossip columns often enough that there would never be any mistaking the 33rd's beautiful commander. And she'd recognized Hunt Athalar, too, though he was never on television. Everyone knew who Hunt Athalar was. She'd heard of him even while growing up in Nidaros, when Randall would talk about his battles in Pangera and whispered when he mentioned Hunt. The Umbra Mortis, the Shadow of Death. Then, the angel hadn't worked for Micah Domitus and his legion, but for the archangel Sandriel. He'd flown in her 45th legion. Demon hunting, rumor claimed his job was, and worse. Jessica hissed,
Why?
Bryce clutched the phone.
Maximus Tertian was murdered last night. Burning Solas, the same way as Danica and the pack.
Bryce shut out every hazy image, breathing in the bright, calming scent of the peppermint vapors rippling from the diffuser on her desk. She'd bought the stupid plastic cone 2 months after Danica had been killed, figuring it couldn't hurt to try some aromatherapy during the long, quiet hours of the day, when her thoughts swarmed and descended, eating her up from the inside out. By the end of the week, she'd bought 3 more and placed them throughout her house. Bryce breathed.
It seems like Philip Briggs might not have killed Danica.
For 2 years, part of her had clung to it, that in the days following the murder, they'd found enough evidence to convict Briggs, who'd wanted Danica dead for busting his rebel bomb ring. Briggs had denied it, but it had added up. He'd been caught purchasing black summoning salts in the weeks before his initial arrest, apparently to fuel some sort of new, horrible weapon. That Danica had been murdered by a pit-level demon, which would have required the deadly black salt to summon it into this world, couldn't have been a coincidence. It seemed quite clear that Briggs had been released, gotten his hands on the black salt, summoned the demon, and set it loose upon Danica and the Pack of Devils. It had attacked the 33rd soldier who'd been patrolling the alleyway, and when its work was done, it had been sent back to hell by Briggs. Though he'd never confessed to it, or what the breed even was, The fact remained that the demon hadn't been seen again in 2 years, since Briggs had been locked up. Case closed. For 2 years, Bryce had clung to those facts, that even though her world had fallen apart, the person responsible was behind bars, forever, deserving of every horror his jailers inflicted on him. Jessica let out a long, long breath.
Did the angels accuse you of anything?
No, not quite. The governor is coming here. Another pause.
To interrogate you?
I hope not. She liked her body parts where they were.
He wants to talk to you, too.
Does Tertian's father know he's dead?
I don't know.
I need to make some phone calls, Jessica said, more to herself,
before the governor comes.
Bryce understood her meaning well enough, so Maximus's father didn't show up at the gallery demanding answers, blaming Bryce for his death. It'd be a mess. Bryce wiped her sweaty palms on her thighs.
The governor will be here soon.
Faint tapping sounded on the Iron Archives door before Lahaba whispered,
Bibi, are you all right?
Bryce put a hand over the mouthpiece of her phone.
Go back to your post, Lily.
Were those two angels?
Bryce ground her teeth.
Yes, go downstairs. Keep Syrinx quiet.
Lahaba let out a sigh, audible through 6 inches of iron. But the fire sprite didn't speak further, suggesting she'd either returned to the archives beneath the gallery or was still eavesdropping. Bryce didn't care, as long as she and the Chimera stayed quiet. Jessica was asking,
When does Micah get there?
8 minutes. Jessica considered.
All right.
Bryce tried not to gape at the fact that she didn't push for more time, especially with a client's death in the balance. But even Jessica knew not to screw around with an archangel. Or maybe she'd finally found a scrap of empathy where Danica's murder was concerned. She sure as hell hadn't demonstrated it when she'd ordered Bryce to get back to work or be turned into a pig 2 weeks after Danica's death. Jessica said,
I don't need to tell you to make sure everything is on lockdown. I'll double check.
But she'd made sure before the angels had even set foot in the gallery.
Then you know what to do, Quinlan,
Jessica said, the sound of rustling sheets or clothes filling the background. Two male voices grumbled in protest. Then the line went dead. Blowing out a breath, Bryce launched into motion. Chapter 11. The Archangel rang the buzzer precisely 7 minutes later. Calming her panting, Bryce scanned the gallery for the 10th time, confirming that all was in place, the art dust-free, any contraband stored below. Her legs felt spindly, the old ache in her thigh clawing at the bone, but her hands remained steady as she reached the front door and hauled it open. The Archangel was gorgeous, horrifically, indecently gorgeous. Hunt Athalar and Isaiah Tiberian stood behind him, almost as good-looking, the latter giving her another bland smile he obviously believed was charming. The former? Hunt's dark eyes missed nothing. Bryce lowered her head to the governor, stepping back, her stupid heels wobbling on the carpet.
Welcome, Your Grace. Please come in.
Micah Domitus's brown eyes devoured her. His power pressed against her skin, ripped the air from the room, her lungs, filled the space with midnight storms, sex and death entwined.
I assume your employer will be joining us through the video screen.
The Archangel said, stepping in from the glaringly bright street.
Fucking hell, his voice. Silk and steel and ancient stone. He could probably make someone come by merely whispering filthy things in their ear.
Even without that voice, it would have been impossible to forget what Micah was, what the governor radiated with every breath, every blink. There were currently 10 archangels who ruled the various territories of the Republic, all bearing the title of governor, all answering only to the Asteri. An ordinary angel's magic might level a building if they were considered powerful, An archangel's power could level an entire metropolis. There was no predicting where the extra strength that separated archangel from angel came from. Sometimes it was passed on, usually upon the careful breeding orders of the Asteri. Other times, it popped up in unremarkable bloodlines. She didn't know much about Micah's history, had never paid attention during history class, too busy drooling over the unfairly perfect face currently before her to listen to her teacher's droning.
"Miss Roga is waiting for our call," she managed to say, and tried not to breathe too loudly as the governor of Valbara swept past. One of his pristine white feathers brushed her bare collarbone. She might have shuddered, were it not for the two angels behind him.
Isaiah just gave her a nod as he trailed Micah toward the chairs before the desk. Hunt Athalar, however, lingered, holding her gaze, before he glanced at her collarbone, as if the feather had left a mark. The tattoo of thorns across his forehead seemed to turn darker. And just like that, the scent of sex rippling off the archangel turned to rot. The Asteri and the archangels could have easily found another way to hobble the power of the fallen, yet they'd enslaved them with the witch spells woven into magical tattoos stamped onto their foreheads like fucked up crowns, and the tattoos on their wrists, SPQM, Senatus Populusque Midgard, the Midgard Senate and people. Total fucking bullshit. As if the Senate was anything but a puppet ruling body. As if the Asteri weren't their emperors and empresses, ruling over everything and everyone for eternity, their rotted souls regenerating from one form to the next. Bryce shoved the thought from her mind as she shut the iron door behind Hunt, just barely missing his gray feathers. His black eyes flashed with warning. She gave him a smile to convey everything she didn't dare say aloud regarding her feelings about this ambush.
"I've faced worse than you, Umbra Mortis. Glower and snarl all you like."
Hunt blinked, the only sign of his surprise, but Bryce was already turning toward her desk, trying not to limp as pain speared through her leg. She dragged up a third chair from the library, which had aggravated her leg further. She didn't dare rub at the thick, curving scar across her upper thigh, hidden under her white dress.
"Can I get you anything, Your Grace? Coffee, tea, something stronger?"
She'd already laid out bottled sparkling water on the small tables between the chairs. The archangel had claimed the middle seat, and as she smiled politely at him, the weight of his gaze pressed on her like a silken blanket.
"I'm fine."
Bryce looked to Hunt and Isaiah, who slid into their chairs.
"They're fine, too," Micah said.
"Very well, then." She strode around the desk, sliding her hand beneath its ledge to push a brass button, and sending up a prayer to merciful Sathona that her voice remained calm, even as her mind kept circling back to the same thought over and over. "Briggs didn't kill Danica. Briggs didn't kill Danica. Briggs didn't kill Danica." The wood panel in the wall behind her split open, revealing a large screen. As it flickered to life, she picked up the desk phone and dialed. Briggs had been a monster who had planned to hurt people, and he deserved to be in jail. But he'd been wrongly accused of the murder. Danica's killer was still out there. Jessica answered on the first ring.
"Is the screen ready?"
"Whenever you are."
Bryce typed the codes into her computer, trying to ignore the governor staring at her like she was a steak and he was something that ate steak, raw and moaning.
"I'm dialing you in," she declared.
Jessica Roga appeared on the screen an instant later, and they both hung up their phones. Behind the sorceress, the hotel suite was decorated in Pangeran splendor, paneled white walls with gilded molding, plush cream carpets and pale pink silk drapes, a four-poster oak bed big enough for her and the two males Bryce had heard when she called before. Jessica played as hard as she worked while over on the massive territory, seeking out more art for the gallery, either through visiting various archaeological digs or courting high-powered clients who already possessed them. despite having less than 10 minutes, and despite using most of that time to make some very important calls, Jessica's flowing navy dress was immaculate, revealing tantalizing glimpses of a lush female body adorned with freshwater pearls at her ears and throat. Her cropped ash-blonde hair glowed in the golden first light lamps, cut shorter on the sides, longer on the top, effortlessly chic and casual. Her face? Her face was both young and wise, bedroom soft yet foreboding. Her pale gray eyes gleamed with glittering magic, alluring and deadly. Bryce had never dared ask why Jessica had defected from the witches centuries ago, why she'd aligned herself with the House of Flame and Shadow and its leader, the Under King, and what she did for him. She called herself a sorceress now, never a witch.
"Morning, Micah,"
Jessica said mildly, a pleasant, disarming voice compared to that of other members of Flame and Shadow, the hoarse rasp of reapers or the silken tones of vampires.
"Jessica,"
Micah purred. Jessica gave him a slight smile, as if she'd heard that purr 1,000 different times from 1,000 different males.
"Pleased as I am to see your handsome face, I'd like to know why you called this meeting. Unless the Danica thing was an excuse to talk to sweet Bryce."
The Danica thing. Bryce kept her face neutral, even as she felt Hunt watching her carefully, as if he could hear her heart thundering, sent the sweat now coating her palms. But Bryce gave him a bored look in return. Micah leaned back in his chair, crossing his long legs, and said without so much as glancing at Bryce,
"Tempting as your assistant is, we have important matters to discuss."
She ignored the outright entitlement, the timbre of that sensual voice. Tempting, as if she were a piece of dessert on a platter. She was used to it, but these goddamned veneer males. Jessica waved with ethereal grace to continue, silver nails sparkling in the hotel's lamplight. Micah said smoothly,
"I believe my triari informed Miss Quinlan of the murder last night, one that was an exact match for the deaths of Danica Fendir and the Pack of Devils 2 years ago."
Bryce kept herself still, unfeeling. She took a subtle inhale of the soothing peppermint wisps from the infuser a few inches away. Micah went on,
"What they did not mention was the other connection."
The two angels flanking the governor stiffened almost imperceptibly. This was clearly the first they were hearing of this as well.
"Oh," Jessica said, "and do I have to pay for this information?"
Vast cold power crackled in the gallery, but the archangel's face remained unreadable.
"I am sharing this information, so we might combine resources."
Jessica arched a blonde brow with preternatural smoothness.
"To do what?"
Micah said.
"For Bryce Quinlan to find the true murderer behind this, of course."
Chapter 12. Bryce had gone still as death, so unmoving that Hunt wondered if she knew it was a solid tell, not about her own nerves, but about her heritage. Only the Fae could go that still. Her boss, the young-faced sorceress, sighed.
"Is your 33rd so incompetent these days that you truly need my assistance help?"
Her lovely voice hardly softened her question.
"Though I suppose I already have my answer, if you falsely convicted Philip Briggs."
Hunt didn't dare grin at her outright challenge. Few people could get away with speaking to Micah Domitus, let alone any archangel like that. He considered the 400-year-old sorceress on the screen. He'd heard the rumors that Jessica answered to the Under King, that she could transform people into common animals if they provoked her, that she'd once been a witch who'd left her clan for reasons still unknown, most likely bad ones if she'd wound up a member of the House of Flame and Shadow. Bryce breathed. I don't know anything about this, or who wanted to kill Tertian.
Jessica sharpened her gaze.
Regardless, you are my assistant. You don't work for the 33rd.
Micah's mouth tightened. Hunt braced himself.
I invited you to this meeting, Jessica, as a courtesy.
His brown eyes narrowed with distaste.
It does indeed appear that Philip Briggs was wrongly convicted. But the fact remains that Danica Fendir and the Pack of Devils apprehended him in his laboratory with undeniable evidence regarding his intention to bomb innocents at the White Raven nightclub. And though he was initially released due to a loophole, in the past 2 years, enough evidence has been found for his earlier crimes that he has been convicted of them, too. As such, he will remain behind bars and serve out the sentence for those earlier crimes as leader of the now inactive Kara's sect, and his participation in the larger human rebellion.
Quinlan seemed to sag with relief, but then Micah went on.
However, this means a dangerous murderer remains loose in this city, able to summon a lethal demon. For sport or revenge, we do not know. I will admit that my 33rd and the auxiliary have exhausted their resources, but the summit is in just over a month. There are individuals attending who will see these murders as proof that I am not in control of my city, let alone this territory, and seek to use it against me.
Of course it wasn't about catching a deadly killer. No, this was pure PR. Even with the summit so far off, Hunt and the other Triari had been prepping for weeks now, getting the units in the 33rd ready for the pomp and bullshit that surrounded the gathering of Valbaran powers every 10 years. Leaders from across the territory would attend, airing their grievances, with maybe a few guest appearances from the ruling assholes across the Haldren. Hunt hadn't yet attended one in Valbara, but he'd been through plenty of other summits in Pangera, with rulers who all pretended they had some semblance of free will. The summit meetings usually amounted to a week of powerful veneer arguing, until the overseeing archangel laid down the law. He had little doubt Micah would be any different. Isaiah had experienced one already, and had warned him that the archangel liked to flex his military might at the summits, liked to have the 33rd in marching and flying formation, decked out in imperial regalia. Hunt's golden breastplate was already being cleaned. The thought of donning the formal armor, the 7 stars of the Asteris crest displayed across his heart, made him want to puke. Jessica examined her silver nails.
Anything exciting happening at the summit this time?
Micah seemed to weigh Jessica's casual expression as he said,
The new Witch Queen will be formally recognized.
Jessica didn't let one speck of emotion show.
I heard of Hecuba's passing, the sorceress said,
no tinge of grief or satisfaction, just fact. But Quinlan tensed, as if she'd shouted them to get back to the murder. Micah added,
And the Asteri are sending Sandriel to deliver a report from the Senate regarding the rebel conflict.
Every thought eddied out of Hunt's head. Even the usually unflappable Isaiah went rigid. Sandriel was coming here. Micah was saying,
Sandriel will arrive at the Comitium next week, and at the Asteri's request, she will be my guest until the summit.
A month? That fucking monster would be in this city for a month. Jessica angled her head with unnerving grace. She might not have been a Reaper, but she sure as shit moved like one.
What does my assistant have to offer in finding the murderer?
Hunt shoved it down, the roaring, the trembling, the stillness. Shoved it down and down and down, until it was just another wave in the black roiling pit inside himself. Forced himself to concentrate on the conversation, and not on the psychopath on her way to this city. Micah's stare settled on Bryce,
who had turned so pale her freckles were like splattered blood across the bridge of her nose.
Miss Quinlan is, thus far, the only person alive to have witnessed the demon the murderer summoned.
Bryce had the nerve to ask, what about the angel in the alley?
Micah's face remained unchanged. He had no memories of the attack. It was an ambush.
Before Bryce could push, he went on, considering the delicate nature of this investigation, I am now willing to look outside the box, as they say, for assistance in solving these murders before they become a true problem.
Meaning the Archangel needed to look good in front of the powers that be, in front of Sandriel, who had reported all to the Asteri and their puppet Senate. A murderer on the loose, capable of summoning a demon that could kill Vanir as easily as humans? Oh, it would be precisely the sort of shit Sandriel would delight in telling the Asteri. Especially if it cost Micah his position, and if she gained it for herself. What was the northwestern quadrant of Pangera compared to all of Valbara? And Micah losing everything meant his slaves, Hunt, Isaiah, Justinian, and so many others, went to whoever inherited his governor's title. Sandriel would never honor Micah's bargain with Hunt. Micah turned to Hunt, a cruel tilt to his lips. You can guess, Athalar, who Sandriel will be bringing with her. Hunt went rigid. Pollux would be all too happy to report his findings as well.
Hunt fought to master his breathing, to keep his face neutral. Pollux Antonius, Sandriel's Triari commander, the Malleus, they called him, the Hammer, as cruel and merciless as Sandriel, and an absolute motherfucking asshole. Jessica cleared her throat.
And you still don't know what kind of demon it was?
She leaned back in her chair, a frown on her full mouth.
No, Micah said through his teeth.
It was true. Even Hunt hadn't been able to identify it, and he'd had the distinct pleasure of killing more demons than he could count. They came in endless breeds and levels of intelligence, ranging from the beasts that resembled feline-canine hybrids to the humanoid shape-shifting princes who ruled over Hell's seven territories, each one darker than the last. The Hollow, the Trench, the Canyon, the Ravine, the Chasm, the Abyss, and the worst of them all, the Pit. Even without a specific identification, though, given its speed and what it had done, the demon fit with something belonging to the Pit, perhaps a pet of the Star Eater himself. Only in the depths of the Pit could something like that evolve. A creature who had never seen light, never needed it. It didn't matter, Hunt supposed, whether the demon was accustomed to light or not. His particular skills could still turn it into chunks of sizzling meat. A quick flash of light, and a demon would either turn tail or writhe in pain. Quinlan's voice cut through the storm in Hunt's head.
You said that there was another connection between the murders then and the one now, beyond the style.
Micah looked at her. To her credit, Quinlan didn't lower her eyes.
Maximus Tertian and Danica Fendier were friends.
Bryce's brows twitched toward each other.
Danica didn't know Tertian.
Micah sighed toward the wood-paneled ceiling high above.
I suspect there might have been a good deal about which she didn't inform you.
I would have known if she was friends with Maximus Tertian, Quinlan ground out.
Micah's power murmured through the room.
Careful, Miss Quinlan.
No one took that kind of tone with an archangel, at least not anyone with nearly zero power in their veins. It was enough to get Hunt to set aside Sandriel's visit and focus on the conversation. Micah went on.
There is also the fact that you knew both Danica and Maximus Tertian, that you were at the White Raven nightclub on each of the nights the murders happened. The similarity is enough to be of interest.
Jessica straightened.
Are you saying that Bryce is a suspect?
Not yet,
Micah said coldly. But anything is possible.
Quinlan's fingers curled into fists, her knuckles going white as she no doubt tried to restrain herself from spitting at the Archangel. She opted to change the subject instead.
What about investigating the others in the pack of devils? None of them might have been a target?
It has already been looked into and dismissed. Danica remains our focus,
Bryce asked tightly.
You honestly think I can find anything when the Ox and 33rd couldn't? Why not get the Asteri to send over someone like the Hind?
The question rippled through the room. Surely Quinlan wasn't dumb enough to wish for that. Jessica threw a warning look at her assistant. Micah, unfazed by the mention of Lydia Servos, the Republic's most notorious spy hunter and breaker, replied,
As I said, I do not wish for knowledge of these events to pass beyond the walls of my city.
Hunt heard what Micah left unspoken. Despite being part of Sandriel's triari, the deer shifter known as the Hind reported directly to the Asteri and was known to be Pollux's lover. The Hammer and the Hind, the smasher of battlefields and the destroyer of the Republic's enemies. Hunt had seen the Hind a few times in Sandriel's stronghold and always walked away unnerved by her unreadable golden eyes. Lydia was as beautiful as she was ruthless in her pursuit of rebel spies. A perfect match for Pollux. The only one who might have suited Pollux more than the Hind was the Harpy, but Hunt tried not to think about the second in command of Sandriel's triari when he could avoid it. Hunt smothered his rising dread. Micah was saying,
Crime statistics suggest that it's likely Danica knew her killer.
Another pointed silence that left Quinlan bristling.
And despite the things she might not have told you, you remain the person who knew Danica Fendir better than anyone. I believe you can provide unparalleled insight.
Jessica leaned toward the screen in her plush hotel room, all grace and restrained power.
All right, Governor. Let's say you commandeer Bryce to look into this. I'd like compensation.
Micah smiled. A sharp, thrilling thing that Hunt had witnessed only before the Archangel blasted someone into wind-torn smithereens.
Regardless of your allegiance to the Underking and the protection you believe it affords you, you remain a citizen of the Republic.
And you will answer to me, he didn't need to add. Jessica said simply,
I'd think you'd be well-versed in the bylaws, Governor. Section 57. If a government official requires the services of an outside contractor, they are to pay...
Fine. You will send your invoice to me.
Micah's wings rustled, the only sign of his impatience. But his voice was kind, at least, as he turned to Quinlan.
I am out of options, and shall soon be out of time. If there is someone who might retrace Danica's steps in her final days... and discover who murdered her, it would be you. You are the only tie between the victims.
She just gaped.
I believe your position here at the gallery also grants you access to individuals who might not be willing to talk to the 33rd or auxiliary. Isaiah Tiberian will report to me on any progress you make, and keep a keen eye on this investigation.
His brown eyes appraised Hunt, as if he could read every line of tension on his body, the panic seeping through his veins at the news of Sandriel's arrival.
Hunt Athalar is experienced in hunting demons. He shall be on protection duty, guarding you during your search for the person behind this.
Bryce's eyes narrowed, but Hunt didn't dare say a word, to blink his displeasure and relief. At least he would have an excuse not to be at the Comitium while Sandriel and Pollux were around. But to be a glorified babysitter? To not be able to work toward earning back his debts?
Very well, Jessica said. Her gaze slid to her assistant. Bryce.
Bryce said quietly, her amber eyes full of cold fire.
I'll find them. She met the Archangel's gaze. And then? I want you to wipe them off the fucking planet.
Yeah, Quinlan had balls. She was stupid and brash, but at least she had nerve. The combination, however, would likely see her dead before she completed the drop. Micah smiled, as if realizing that too.
What is done with the murderer will be up to our justice system.
Mild bureaucratic nonsense, even as the Archangel's power thundered through the room, as if promising Quinlan he'd do exactly as she wished. Bryce muttered,
fine.
Jessup Aroga frowned at her assistant, noting that her face still burned with that cold fire.
Do try not to die, Bryce. I'd hate to endure the inconvenience of training someone new.
The feed cut off. Bryce stood in those absurd shoes. Walking around the desk, she swept the silky curtain of red hair over a shoulder, the slightly curled ends almost brushing the generous curve of her ass. Micah stood, eyes sliding down Bryce as if he too noted that particular detail, but said to none of them in particular,
we're done here.
Bryce's dress was so tight that Hunt could see the muscles in her thighs strain as she hauled open the iron door for the Archangel. A faint wince passed over her face, then vanished. Hunt reached her as the Archangel and his commander paused outside. She only gave Hunt a winning, bland smile and began closing the door on him before he could step onto the dusty street. He wedged a foot between the door and jamb, and the enchantments zinged and snapped against his skin as they tried to align around him. Her amber eyes flared.
What?
Hunt gave her a sharp grin.
Make a list of suspects today. Anyone who might have wanted Danica and her pack dead.
If Danica knew her murderer, odds were that Bryce probably did too.
And make a list of Danica's locations and activities during the last few days of her life.
Bryce only smiled again, as if she hadn't heard a damn word he said. But then she hit some button beside the door that had the enchantments burning like acid. Hunt jumped back, his lightning flaring, defending against an enemy that was not there. The door shut. She purred through the intercom.
I'll call you. Don't bother me until then.
Erd fucking spare him.
Chapter 13. Atop the roof of the gallery a moment later, Isaiah silent at his side, Hunt watched the late morning sunlight gild Micah's pristine white wings and set the strands of gold in his hair to near glowing, as the Archangel inspected the walled city sprawled around them. Hunt instead surveyed the flat roof, broken up only by equipment and the doorway to the gallery below. Micah's wings shifted, his only warning that he was about to speak.
Time is not our ally.
Hunt just said,
do you really think Quinlan can find whoever is behind this?
He let the question convey the extent of his own faith in her. Micah angled his head, an ancient lethal predator sizing up prey.
I think this is a matter that requires us to use every weapon in our arsenal. No matter how unorthodox.
He sighed as he looked out at the city again. Lunathian had been built as a model of the ancient coastal cities around the Roggen Sea, a near-exact replica that included its sandstone walls, the arid climate, the olive groves and little farms that lined distant hills beyond the city borders to the north, even the great temple to a patron goddess in the very center. But unlike those cities, this one had been allowed to adapt. Streets lay in an orderly grid, not a tangle, and modern buildings jutted up like lances in the heart of the CBD, far surpassing the strict height codes of Pangaea. Micah had been responsible for it, for seeing this city as a tribute to the old model, but also a place for the future to thrive. He'd even embraced using the name Crescent City over Lunathian. A male of progress. Of tolerance, they said. Hunt often wondered what it would feel like to rip out his throat.
He'd contemplated it so many times he'd lost count. Had contemplated blasting a bolt of his lightning into that beautiful face, that perfect mask for the brutal, demanding bastard inside. Maybe it was unfair. Micah had been born into his power, had never known a life as anything but one of the major forces on this planet. A near god who was unused to having his authority questioned and would put down any threats to it. A rebellion led by a fellow archangel and 3,000 warriors had been just that, even though nearly all of his triari was now made up of the fallen, offering them a second chance, apparently. Hunt couldn't fathom why he'd bother being that merciful. Micah said,
"Sabine is certainly already putting her people on this case, and will be visiting my office to tell me precisely what she thinks of the fuck-up with Briggs."
An icy glance between them.
"I want us to find the murderer, not the wolves."
Hunt said coolly,
"Dead or alive?"
"Alive, preferably. But dead is better than letting the person run free."
Hunt dared ask,
"And will this investigation count toward my quota? It could take months."
Isaiah tensed, but Micah's mouth curled upward. For a long moment, he said nothing. Hunt didn't so much as blink. Then Micah said,
"How about this incentive, Athalar? You solve this case quickly. You solve it before the summit, and I'll lower your debts to 10.
The very wind seemed to halt.
10,
Hunt managed to say.
"More assignments?"
It was outrageous. Micah had no reason to offer him anything, not when his word was all that was needed for Hunt to obey.
10 more assignments,
Micah said, as if he hadn't dropped a fucking bomb into the middle of Hunt's life. It could be a fool's bargain. Micah might draw out those 10 assignments over decades, but burning fucking soulless, the Archangel added.
"You tell no one about this, Athalar."
That he didn't bother to also warn Isaiah suggested enough about how much he trusted his commander. Hunt said as calmly as he could,
"All right."
Micah's stare turned merciless, though. He scanned Hunt from head to toe, then the gallery beneath their booted feet, the assistant within it. Micah growled,
"Keep your dick in your pants and your hands to yourself, or you'll find yourself without either for a long while."
Hunt would regrow both, of course. Any immortal who'd made the drop could regrow just about anything if they weren't beheaded or severely mutilated, with arteries bleeding out. But the recovery would be painful, slow, and being dickless, even for a few months, wasn't high up on Hunt's to-do list. Fucking around with a half-human assistant was the least of his priorities anyway, with freedom potentially 10 kills away. Isaiah nodded for both of them.
"We'll keep it professional."
Micah twisted toward the CBD, assessing the river breeze, his pristine wings twitching. He said to Isaiah,
"Be in my office in an hour."
Isaiah bowed at the waist to the Archangel, a Pangeran gesture that made Hunt's hackles rise. He'd been forced to do that, at the risk of having his feathers pulled out, burned off, sliced apart. Those initial decades after the fall had not been kind. The wings he knew were mounted to the wall in the Asteri throne room were proof. But Isaiah had always known how to play the game, how to stomach their protocols and hierarchies, how to dress like them, dine and fuck like them. He'd fallen and risen back to the rank of commander because of it. It wouldn't surprise anyone if Micah recommended that Isaiah's halo be removed at the next governor's council with the Asteri after the winter solstice. No assassinating, butchering, or torturing required. Micah didn't so much as glance at them before he shot into the skies. Within seconds, he'd become a white speck in the sea of blue. Isaiah blew out a breath, frowning toward the spires atop the five towers of the Comitium, a glass and steel crown rising from the heart of the CBD.
You think there's a catch?
Hunt asked his friend.
He doesn't scheme like that.
Like Sandriel and most of the other archangels.
He means what he says. He's got to be desperate if he wants to give you that kind of motivation.
He owns me. His word is my command.
With Sandriel coming, maybe he realized it'd be advantageous if you were inclined to be loyal.
Again, slave.
Then I don't fucking know, Hunt. Maybe he was just feeling generous.
Isaiah shook his head again.
Don't question the hand Erd dealt you.
Hunt blew out a breath.
I know.
Odds were, the truth was a combination of those things. Isaiah arched a brow.
You think you can find whoever is behind this?
I don't have a choice.
Not with this new bargain on the table. He tasted the dry wind, half listening to its rasping song through the sacred cypresses lining the street below. The thousands of them in this city planted in honor of its patron goddess.
You'll find them, Isaiah said. I know you will.
If I can stop thinking about Sandriel's visit.
Hunt blew out a breath, dragging his hands through his hair.
I can't believe she's coming here, with that piece of shit Pollux.
Isaiah said carefully.
Tell me you realize that Micah threw you another big fucking bone just now, in stationing you to protect Quinlan, instead of keeping you around the Comitium with Sandriel there.
Hunt knew that. Knew Micah was well aware of how Hunt felt about Sandriel and Pollux, but rolled his eyes.
Whatever.
Trumpet all you want about how fantastic Micah is. But remember that the bastard is welcoming her with open arms.
The Asteri ordered her to come for the summit, Isaiah countered. It's standard for them to send one of the archangels as their emissary to these meetings. Governor Ephraim came to the last one here. Micah welcomed him, too.
Hunt said, the fact remains that she'll be here for a whole month, in that fucking complex. He pointed to the five buildings of the Comitium.
Lunathian isn't her scene. There's nothing to amuse her here.
With most of the fallen either scattered to the four winds or dead, Sandriel enjoyed nothing better than strolling through her castle dungeons, crammed full of human rebels, and selecting one, two, or three at a time. The arena at the heart of her city was just for the pleasure of destroying these prisoners in various ways. Battles to the death, public torture, unleashing lowers and basic animals against them. There was no end to her creativity. Hunt had seen and endured it all. With the conflict currently surging, those dungeons were sure to be packed. Sandriel and Pollux must have been enjoying the hell out of the pain that flowed from that arena. The thought made Hunt stiffen.
Pollux will be a fucking menace in this city.
The Hammer was well known for his favorite activities, slaughter and torture.
Pollux will be dealt with. Micah knows what he's like, what he does. The Asteri might have ordered him to welcome Sandriel, but he isn't going to let her give Pollux free rein.
Isaiah paused, eyes going distant as he seemed to weigh something internally.
But I can make you unavailable while Sandriel visits.
Permanently.
Hunt lifted an eyebrow.
If you're referring to Micah's promise to make me dickless, I'll pass.
Isaiah laughed quietly.
Micah gave you an order to investigate with Quinlan. Orders that will make you very, very busy. Especially if he wants Bryce protected.
Hunt threw him half a grin.
So busy that I won't have time to be around the Comitium.
So busy that you'll be staying on the roof across from Quinlan's building to monitor her.
I've slept in worse conditions.
So had Isaiah.
And it'd be an easy cover for keeping an eye on Quinlan for more than protection.
Isaiah frowned.
You honestly mark her as a suspect?
I'm not ruling it out, Hunt said,
shrugging. Micah didn't clear her either. So until she proves otherwise, she's not off my list. He wondered who the hell might make it onto Quinlan's list of suspects. When Isaiah only nodded, Hunt asked,
You're not going to tell Micah I'm watching her around the clock?
If he notices that you're not sleeping at the barracks, I'll tell him. But until then, what he doesn't know won't hurt him.
Thanks.
It wasn't a word in Hunt's normal vocabulary, not to anyone with wings, but he meant it. Isaiah had always been the best of them, the best of the fallen, and all the legionaries Hunt had ever served with. Isaiah should have been in the Asterian Guard, with those skills and those pristine white wings, but like Hunt, Isaiah had come from the gutter. Only the highborn would do for the Asteri's elite private legion, even if it meant passing over good soldiers like Isaiah. Hunt, with his gray wings and common blood, despite his lightning, had never even been in the running. Being asked to join Shahar's elite 18th had been privilege enough. He loved her almost instantly for seeing his worth, and Isaiah's. All of the 18th had been like that. Soldiers she'd selected not for their status, but their skills, their true value. Isaiah gestured toward the CBD and the comitium with it. Grab your gear from the barracks. I need to make a stop before I meet with Micah. At Hunt's blink, Isaiah winced. I owe Prince Rune a visit to confirm Quinlan's alibi. It was the last fucking thing Hunt wanted to do, and the last fucking thing he knew Isaiah wanted to do, but protocols were protocols. You want me to go with you? Hunt offered. It was the least he could offer. The corner of Isaiah's mouth lifted. Considering that you broke Dannon's nose the last time you were in a room together, I'm going to say no. Wise move, Hunt drawled.
He deserved it.
Micah, mercifully, had found the entire event, the incident, as Naomi called it, amusing. It wasn't every day that the Fae had their asses handed to them, so even the governor had discreetly gloated over the altercation at the spring equinox celebrations the previous year. He'd given Hunt a whole week off for it. A suspension, Micah had claimed. But that suspension had come with an especially padded paycheck, and three less deaths to atone for. Isaiah said, I'll call you later to check in.
Good luck.
Isaiah threw him a weary, worn smile, the only hint of the grind of all these years with those two tattoos, and went to track down Rune Dannon, the Crown Prince of the Fae. Bryce paced the showroom once, hissed at the pain in her leg, and kicked off her heels hard enough that one slammed into the wall, setting an ancient vase shuddering. A cool voice asked behind her,
When you nail Hunt Athalar's balls to the wall, will you do me a favor and take a picture?
She glared at the vidscreen that had come on again, and the sorceress still sitting there.
You really want to get mixed up in this, boss?
Jessica leaned back in her gilded chair, a queen at ease.
Good old-fashioned revenge doesn't hold any appeal.
I have no idea who wanted Danica and the pack dead. None. It had made sense when it seemed like Briggs had summoned the demon to do it. He'd been released that day, Danica was on edge and upset about it, and then she had died. But if it wasn't Briggs, and with Maximus Tertian killed, she didn't know where to start. But she'd do it, find whoever had done this. A small part of it was just to make Micah Domitus eat his words, hinting that she might be of interest in this case. But she ground her teeth. She'd find whoever had done this and make them regret ever being born. Bryce walked over to the desk, stifling the limp. She perched on the edge.
The governor must be desperate.
And insane, if he was asking for her help.
I don't care about the governor's agenda, Jessica said. Play vengeful detective all you want, Bryce, but do remember that you have a job. Client meetings will not take a back seat.
I know.
Bryce chewed on the inside of her cheek. If whoever is behind this is strong enough to summon a demon like that to do their dirty work, I'll likely wind up dead too.
Very likely, given that she hadn't decided if or when to make the drop yet. Those gray, glittering eyes roved over her face.
Then keep Athalar close.
Bryce bristled, as if she were some little female in need of a big, strong warrior to guard her. Even if it was partially true, mostly true, totally and definitely true, if that demon was being summoned again. But make a list of suspects indeed. And the other task he'd given her, to make a list of Danica's last locations? Her body tightened at the thought. She might accept Athalar's protection, but she didn't need to make it easy for the swaggering asshole. Jessica's phone rang. The female glanced at the screen.
It's Tertian's father.
She threw Bryce a warning glare.
If I start losing money because you're off playing detective with the Umbra Mortis, I'll turn you into a turtle.
She lifted the phone to her ear, and the feed ended. Bryce blew out a long breath before she hit the button to close the screen into the wall. The silence of the gallery twined around her, gnawing at her bones. Lahaba, for once, seemed to not be eavesdropping. No tapping on the iron door filled the thrumming silence. Not a whisper of the tiny, incurably nosy fire sprite. Bryce braced her arm on the cool surface of the desk, cupping her forehead in her hand. Danica had never mentioned knowing Tertian. They'd never even spoken of him, not once. And that was all she had to go on? Without Briggs as the summoner killer, the murder didn't make sense. Why had the demon chosen their apartment when it was three stories up and located in a supposedly monitored building? It had to be intentional. Danica and the others, Tertian included, must have been targeted, with Bryce's connection to the latter a sick coincidence. Bryce toyed with the amulet on the end of her golden chain, zipping it back and forth. Later. She'd think it over tonight because... She glanced at the clock. Shit. She had another client coming in 45 minutes, which meant she should get through the tsunami of paperwork for the Svadgard wood carving purchased yesterday. Or maybe she should work on that job application she'd kept in a secret, deceptively named file on her computer, paper vendor spreadsheets. Jessica, who left her in charge of everything from restocking toilet paper to ordering printer paper, would never open the file. She'd never see that among the actual documents Bryce had thrown in there was one folder, March Office Supply Invoices, that didn't contain a spreadsheet. It held a cover letter, a resume, and half-completed applications for positions at about 10 different places. Some were long shots, Crescent City Art Museum Associate Curator. As if she'd ever get that job, when she had neither an art nor a history degree. And when most museums believed places like Griffin Antiquities should be illegal. Other positions, personal assistant to Miss Fancy Pants Lawyer, would be more of the same. Different setting and boss, but same old bullshit. But they were a way out. Yeah, she'd have to find some kind of arrangement with Jessica regarding her debts, and avoid finding out if just mentioning she wanted to leave would get her turned into some slithering animal. But dicking around with the applications, endlessly tweaking her resume, it made her feel better, at least. Some days. But if Danica's murderer had resurfaced, if being in this dead-end job could help, those resumes were a waste of time. Her phone's dark screen barely reflected the lights high, high above. Sighing again, Bryce punched in her security code and opened the message thread.
You won't regret this. I've had a long while to figure out all the ways I'm going to spoil you, all the fun we're going to have.
She could have recited Connor's messages from memory, but it hurt more to see them. Hurt enough to feel through every part of her body the dark remnants of her soul. So she always looked. Go enjoy yourself,
I'll see you in a few days. The white screen burned her eyes. Message me when you're home safe. She shut that window and didn't dare open up her audio mail. She usually had to be in one of her monthly emotional death spirals to do that, to hear Danica's laughing voice again. Bryce loosed a long breath, then another, then another. She'd find the person behind this, for Danica, for the pack of devils. She'd do it, do anything. She opened up her phone again and began typing out a group message to Juniper and Fury. Not that Fury ever replied. No, the thread was a two-way conversation between Bryce and June. She'd written out half of her message. Philip Briggs didn't kill Danica. The murders are starting again, and I'm... when she deleted it. Micah had given an order to keep this quiet, and if her phone was hacked, she wouldn't jeopardize being taken off the case. Fury had to know about it already, that her so-called friend hadn't contacted her. Bryce shoved the thought away. She'd tell Juniper face to face. If Micah was right and there was somehow a connection between Bryce and how the victims were chosen, she couldn't risk leaving Juniper unaware. Wouldn't lose anyone else. Bryce glanced at the sealed iron door, rubbed the deep ache in her leg once before standing. Silence walked beside her during the entire trip downstairs. Chapter 14. Rune Dannon stood before the towering oak doors to his father's study and took a bracing, cooling breath. It had nothing to do with the 30-block run he'd made from his unofficial office above a dive bar in the old square over to his father's sprawling marble villa in the heart of Fyro. Rune let out a breath and knocked. He knew better than to barge in.
Enter.
The cold male voice leached through the doors, through Rune, but he shoved aside any indication of his thundering heart and slid into the room, shutting the door behind him. The Autumn King's personal study was larger than most single-family houses. Bookshelves rose two stories on every wall, crammed with tomes and artifacts both old and new, magic and ordinary. A golden balcony bisected the rectangular space, accessible by either of the spiral staircases at the front and back, and heavy black velvet curtains currently blocked the morning light from the tall windows overlooking the interior courtyard of the villa. The orrery in the far back of the space drew Rune's eye, a working model of their seven planets, moons, and sun, made from solid gold. Rune had been mesmerized by it as a boy, back when he'd been stupid enough to believe his father actually gave a shit about him, spending hours in here watching the male make whatever observations and calculations he jotted down in his black leather notebooks. He'd asked only once about what his father was looking for exactly.
Patterns,
was all his father said. The Autumn King sat at one of the four massive work tables, each littered with books and an array of glass and metal devices. Experiments for whatever the fuck his father did with those patterns. Rune passed one of the tables, where iridescent liquid bubbled within a glass orb set over a burner, the flame likely of his father's making, puffs of violet smoke curling from it.
Should I be wearing a hazmat suit? Rune asked, aiming for the work table where his father peered through a foot-long prism ensconced in some delicate silver contraption.
State your business, Prince,
his father said shortly, an amber eye fixed to the viewing apparatus atop the prism. Rune refrained from commenting about how the tax-paying people of this city would feel if they knew how one of their seven heads spent his days. The six lower heads were all appointed by Micah, not elected by any democratic process. There were councils within councils, designed to give people the illusion of control. But the main order of things was simple. The governor ruled, and the city heads led their own districts under him. Beyond that, the 33rd Legion answered only to the governor, while the Ox obeyed the city heads, divided into units based upon districts and species. It grew murkier from there. The wolves claimed the shifter packs were the commanders of the Ox, but the Fae insisted that this distinction belonged to them instead.
It made dividing, claiming, responsibilities difficult. Rune had been heading up the Fey Division of the Ox for 15 years now. His father had given the command, and he had obeyed. He had little choice. Good thing he'd trained his entire life to be a lethal, efficient killer. Not that it brought him any particular joy.
Some major shit is going down, Rune said, halting on the other side of the table. I just got a visit from Isaiah Tiberian. Maximus Tertian was murdered last night, in exactly the same way that Danica and her pack were killed.
His father adjusted some dial on the prism device.
I received the report earlier this morning. It appears Philip Briggs wasn't the murderer.
Rune stiffened.
You were going to tell me when?
His father glanced up from the prism device.
Am I beholden to you, Prince?
The bastard certainly wasn't, his title aside. Though they were close in depth of power, the fact remained that Rune, despite his starborn status and possession of the Star Sword, would always have just a little less than his father. He'd never decided, after he'd gone through his ordeal and made the drop 50 years ago, whether it was a relief or a curse to have come up short on the power ranking. On the one hand, had he surpassed his father, the playing field would have tipped in his favor. On the other, it would have established him firmly as a rival. Having seen what his father did to rivals, it was better to not be on that list.
This information is vital. I already put out a call to Flynn and Declan to amp up patrols in Fyro. We'll have every street watched.
Then it does not appear that I needed to tell you, does it?
His father was nearing 500 years old, had worn the golden crown of the Autumn King for most of that time, and had been an asshole for all of it. And he still showed no signs of aging. Not as the Fae did, with their gradual fading into death like a shirt washed too many times. So it'd be another few centuries of this. Playing prince, having to knock on a door and wait for permission to enter, having to kneel and obey. Rune was one of about a dozen Fae princes across the whole planet Midgard, and had met most of the others over the decades. But he stood apart as the only starborn among them. Among all the Fae. Like Rune, the other princes served under preening, vain kings stationed in the various territories as heads of city districts or swaths of wilderness. Some of them had been waiting for their thrones for centuries, counting down each decade as if it were mere months. It disgusted him, always had, along with the fact that everything he had was bankrolled by the bastard before him, the office above the dive bar, the villa in Fyro adorned with priceless antiques that his father had gifted him upon winning the Star Sword during his ordeal. Rune never stayed at the villa, instead choosing to live in a house he shared with his two best friends near the old square, also purchased with his father's money. Officially, the money came from the salary Rune received for heading up the Fae Auxiliary Patrols. But his father's signature authorized that weekly check. The Autumn King lifted the prism device.
Did the commander of the 33rd say anything of note?
The meeting had been one step short of a disaster. First, Tiberian had grilled him about Bryce's whereabouts last night, until Rune was about one breath away from beating the shit out of the angel, commander of the 33rd or no. Then Tiberian had the balls to ask about Rune's whereabouts. Rune had refrained from informing the commander that pummeling Maximus Tertian for grabbing Bryce's hand had been tempting. She'd have bitten his head off for it, and she'd have been able to handle herself, sparing Rune the political nightmare of setting off a blood feud between their two houses. Not just between Sky and Breath and Flame and Shadow, but between the Danans and the Tertians, and thus every Fae and vampire living in Valbara and Pangera. The Fae didn't fuck around with their blood feuds. Neither did the Vamps.
No, Rune said, though Maximus Tertian died a few hours after having a business meeting with Bryce.
His father set down the prism, his lip curling.
I told you to warn that girl to stay quiet.
That girl. Bryce was always that girl or the girl to their father. Rune hadn't heard the male speak her name in 12 years, not since her first and last visit to this villa. Everything had changed after that visit. Bryce had come here for the first time, a cultish 13-year-old ready to finally meet her father and his people, to meet Rune, who had been intrigued at the prospect of finding he had a half-sister after more than 60 years of being an only child. The Autumn King had insisted that the visit be discreet, not saying the obvious.
Until the Oracle whispers of your future.
What had gone down had been an unmitigated disaster not only for Bryce, but for Rune as well. His chest still ached when he remembered her leaving the villa in tears of rage, refusing to look back over her shoulder even once. His father's treatment of Bryce had opened Rune's eyes to the Autumn King's true nature, and the cold fey male before him had never forgotten this fact. Rune had visited Bryce frequently at her parents' place over the next 3 years. She'd been a bright spot, the brightest spot if he felt like being honest. Until that stupid, shameful fight between them that had left things in such shambles that Bryce still hated his guts. He didn't blame her, not with the words he'd said, that he'd immediately regretted as soon as they'd burst from him. Now, Rune said,
Bryce's meeting with Maximus preceded my warning to behave. I arrived right as she was wrapping up.
When he'd gotten that call from Rizzo Sergato, the butterfly shifter's laughing voice unusually grave, he'd sprinted over to the White Raven, not giving himself time to second-guess the wisdom of it.
I'm her alibi, according to Tiberian. I told him that I walked her home and stayed there until well after Tertian's time of death.
His father's face revealed nothing.
And yet, it still does not seem very flattering that the girl was at the club on both nights and interacted with the victims hours before.
Rune said tightly,
Bryce had nothing to do with the murders. Despite the alibi shit, the governor must believe it too, because Tiberian swore Bryce is being guarded by the 33rd.
It might have been admirable that they bothered to do so, had all the angels not been arrogant assholes. Luckily, the most arrogant of those assholes hadn't been the one to pay Rune this particular visit.
That girl has always possessed a spectacular talent for being where she shouldn't.
Rune controlled the anger thrumming through him, his shadow magic seeking to veil him, shield him from sight. Another reason his father resented him. Beyond his starborn gifts, the bulk of his magic skewed toward his mother's kin, the Fae who ruled Avalon, the mist-shrouded isle in the north, the sacred heart of Faedom. His father would have burned Avalon into ashes if he could. That Rune did not possess his father's flames, the flames of most of the Valbaran Fae, that he instead possessed Avalon abilities, more than Rune ever let on, to summon and walk through shadows, had been an unforgivable insult. Silence rippled between father and son, interrupted only by the ticking metal of the orrery at the other end of the room as the planets inched around their orbit. His father picked up the prism, holding it up to the first lights.